You are listening to the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Morning, Sambonani. Hello, how's it? It's very nice to have you guys back on the Big Daddy Liberty Show. It is a wonderful Friday. Shabbat shalom to everybody who's listening. Again, as I must apologize if the sound quality is a little dicey, we are trying a new app to do this. Guys, welcome to the show. As usual, we're going to have a quick chat today about the news that was in this week. What piqued your interest? What got you talking? What, you know, as you sit at home under this lockdown condition, what's been consuming your dinner table conversations? What did you talk about through Pesach, for example? The irony was not lost on me, you know, of literally commemorating Pesach as we sit locked up, so to speak, in our homes. You know, these are some of the issues I think we've been discussing and looking at as South Africans as we grapple with the issue of a lockdown. Remember, we are a democracy. This is not a kingdom. In a democracy, you get to question the actions, the decisions being made by your politicians. We should never be complacent to South Africans to literally go, oh, well, you know, because it's a particular crisis or a moment in history where we're facing a pandemic, we should cede all decision-making, all control to politicians. That's not how a democracy works. Vigilance is a key ingredient in ensuring that a democracy, one which is founded on freedoms at least, is something that continues. So I think today's show is going to be rooted in that conversation as I hopefully, if the technology allows, I'll have two guests on today, two very interesting voices. One, Hugo Kruger, who is a writer and researcher. He writes quite a lot for various publications. I know him rather through the Rational Standard, which is a online newspaper. And of course, a voice who I think is quite familiar to the show, Mr. Mpiake Dlamini, who is from the Free Market Foundation. And the topic really that we're going to be looking at is the issue of liberties, civil liberties during moments of a pandemic and / lockdown like this one. So we're going to be looking at the South African government. We're going to be looking at governments generally, around the issue, of, their response to COVID-19. Has the instrument of a lockdown, you know, whether it's a one size fits all type lockdown or a more sort of nuanced targeted lockdown, has it been something which is an infringement on our civil liberties? Is it a necessary step in fighting COVID, for example? I think Hugo and the research he's done will be able to answer that. And then we'll look at the issue of civil liberties with our friend Mpiake Dlamini. So that's going to be the conversation we're going to have today. I hope you guys are warm and you're having some form of breakfast right now, listening to your favorite fat boy, Big Daddy Liberty. I'm very happy to be back on air. And as I said, after this short break, we're going to be in conversation, hopefully, with Mpiake Dlamini from the Free Market Foundation and Hugo Kruger.
Stay tuned for the Big Daddy Liberty Show on 101.9 High FM.
Guys, welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. I'm your favorite fat boy, Big Daddy Liberty. Guys, again, a big apology for the, you know, the technical glitches. It's one of those days when you're dealing with gremlins. But shout out to the producer, Craig, for sorting everything out. I do have my guests, waiting with me. As I mentioned before the break, I'm in conversation with Mr. Hugo Kruger, who is a writer and analyst for various publications, notably, or at least I know him on the Rational Standard. And of course, we have Mr. Mpiake Dlamini, a researcher and analyst from the Free Market Foundation. Gentlemen, Hugo and Mpiake, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
We're going to have a quick 15-minute conversation and then a quick break, and then we'll wrap up the conversation in a 10-minute segment after that. So let me get straight into it because our time is quite short. Hugo, on Tuesday we had a conversation on the other show that I co-host the IRR show regarding the various responses of governments around the world to the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, I'm not going to ask you to go into detail again, but generally speaking, let's maybe leave it to, or let's look at the, give me three choice countries that we can sort of compare the responses to, and I'm gonna give you those countries. Give me the response by basically us as South Africans, what we've done. The country of the Germany that we had a conversation about last time. You were sort of praising their response, and of course the country that you're in at the moment, France. What have those countries done in response to COVID? And let's have this conversation in the context of the issue of civil liberties in their response. Hugo?
Okay, so South Africa and France's response has been more or less similar. Basically, they've closed down everything and then they try to treat people as children, with the exception that you can get cigarettes in France and alcohol. They haven't gone that far. And also, I can go for a walk, but I still need to declare and say why I'm outside. That's mainly been the French and South African response. The German response has been, they've also had a lockdown. But they let the factories open. They haven't had a lockdown everywhere in the country, but more importantly, they tested everyone. Mm. And because they tested, they had the data and they knew exactly where the virus was. And when you do that, you know when the threat's over. Mm. The South African French response has been, unfortunately, like the English response. They ran this thing on models and they assume that everything is going to obey the rules of their models. Mm. And the reality doesn't work that way. And if you just can add quickly onto that, the Chinese response, which was they locked down everyone, you know, which is a horrible response, but they also tested everyone. And a lot of people forget that they tested.
And the issue of testing is one which I'm grappling with online, because it does answer the question of what the purpose of the lockdown is. In other words, I've created these two fictitious categories, if you will. Both of them hinged on the idea of a lockdown, but the purpose of the lockdown being different in each. So in the one instance, you know, you have a securocrat type lockdown where, you know, there's big, tough talk by the state. You know, South Africa is a good example of this. You know, our Minister of Police, Bheki Cele, basically, you know, talking tough, we're going to lock everything down, armies, boots on the ground. And then you have the other form of a lockdown, which seems to be more public health driven, where you have a health minister who perhaps says, look, this is the purpose of a lockdown. We're ramping up testing, week by week. And I don't think South Africa has that particular lockdown, or am I wrong, Hugo?
No, you're right. And that's the exact reason why we are not managing it properly. Because, you know, the German president was on radio last week and he said, guys, let's not joke about this. This is not a war. This is a public health crisis. So they knew exactly what they were dealing with. South Africa and France said, you know, Monsieur Macron also said that we're fighting a war against the virus. It's completely ridiculous. You cannot shoot a virus. And that is why the government's response has been war-driven. And not public health driven. And then they wonder why they're not controlling it properly. And getting back to the civil liberties thing, I think what is happening in South Africa in particular is disgusting, with the amount of people being shot. I think until last week, more people were killed by the security forces than the virus. It's completely ridiculous.
I mean, it's a massive indictment. And Bheki, I'm going to turn to you because I think we've been quite vocal, I think, online in terms of raising the alarm around, you know, the need for citizens in a democracy, even at a time of a crisis like this one, to be ever vigilant.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true, Sihle. I mean, like it's been shocking actually how South Africans have just folded to the state and allowed the state to take ever more of their rights without really much questions, without any evidence presented until this week. And so we've been in lockdown up until this point. So they've only presented evidence this week with Professor Karim. And so this has been shocking to see South Africans just accept it. I mean, the restrictions have been quite draconian. You can't buy certain products because they're not deemed essential by a cabinet member. And this is important to understand that it's not just that, the idea of having essential goods designated by anyone is ridiculous on its own face. The fact is the regulations give the power to the minister to determine what is essential or not. So looking at it from a rule of law point of view, wouldn't it have been made more sense to define, in case we ever need to define what is essential or not, to define that legislation, to have parliament actually decide what's, because they represent us, the people, And they, as our representative, they decide what should be essential during any times of national crisis. And so things like that, I think, will be lingering questions from this, the extent to which we've allowed the states. I mean, the fact that they are now allowed to, like, every time you get a COVID-19 test, they get your information, your address, your cell phone number, and put it in a database. And every time that you are suspected of having been in contact with someone who's infected with COVID-19, according to what they mean, that determines, and they can put your personal information on the database as well. And after the lockdown is over, the information will still be on the database, but they will be identified. So it remains to be seen what that will mean.
And I think you're absolutely spot on in raising the issue that, you know, there are some serious questions around freedoms and rights that are coming out on this one. And anybody who watches me online knows that I'm a critic of the one-size-fits-all approach of a lockdown. I mean, if you're going to use a lockdown as a tool, whether you agree with it or not is not in question, but if you're going to use it, one would believe that it should be data-driven. And let me just quickly speak to some of the data. And Hugo, I'm going to bring you in on this one. It would have seemed, if I look at the data coming out of the Department of Health and other sources that have been collated, that this virus, this disease, this pandemic, if you will, the data seems to be heavily skewed in its affecting older individuals. I mean, if I look at the sort of data that I have in front of me here, let me just quickly open it up. South Africa has conducted 95,000 tests so far. About 2,600 people have been positively identified, and we've had 48 deaths. But what we're not being told, Hugo, is, you know, the sort of a dig deep into the data. For example, you know, we're no longer, the government's no longer releasing data as to the age groupings that this is mostly affecting. But we do know from data around the world that it's mostly older people, which then begs into question. That's what I want to put to you. Let's look at the actual mechanism of a lockdown itself, whether it's a security tool or a public health tool. Are we seeing, is it a rational tool to use? Let me actually just come up with the question quite directly. Is it a rational tool to use when in reality the data showing us that COVID is basically affecting mostly older population, the older segments of the population, including here in South Africa?
Well, I think that's you've answered yourself there. Look, if you have a model which in the beginning predicts it's the end of times, you are basically following the prophecies of Nostradamus. If you have data, which tells you that, listen, not everyone was going to die. It was reasonable to believe that lots of people would die in January. Now we have data showing it's not the case. Just, you know, I've got three interesting statistics. They come from Italy, they come from Iceland, and they come from Germany. Okay. They tested full towns. Everyone in the town in Iceland and Germany, where the virus was rampaged. In Iceland, they found 0.002% of the people died at the same rate in Italy. That's 1/100th of the people who have flu. In Germany, they found 0.37. That's about three times the people who have got flu. So now you know how proportionate your response must be. But if you don't have data, you cannot do this. You cannot say, is it old people that must stay safe? Is it young people who must go out? I mean, I see no reason at this moment why schools cannot open, why young people who are not immune compromised, HIV positive, in all underlying conditions, why ordinary people cannot go to work. And the quicker they get the virus, the quicker they'll build immunity to it. So the quicker it will die. But you cannot make any of these decisions if you are only following a model of a guy from Imperial College, which I suspect South Africa is doing, or a professor from Wits, or whatever it might
be. I just want to briefly stay on this topic because for me, it's the data that should be determining the actions by any government, including the South African government. To this effect, in terms of what I'm seeing here, the average daily test per week in South Africa hasn't really changed much. And I don't think we're testing enough people. I mean, for example, in the week from the 10th to the 16th of April, we've only done about 3,700 tests or so. Surely this is not enough, Hugo.
Yeah, and then the other thing is South Africa's tests have mainly been done by the private sector. The government's done, I think, 5,000 tests. So generally the people who can afford those tests, they cost 1,000 rand each. In other words, you've got data disproportionately skewed to the middle class. You don't know anything that's happening in township areas. And telling why it's important to test everyone, they found a study in Italy, which I saw yesterday, which said that 75% of the people with this virus don't know they've got it. They're completely asymptomatic. In Iceland, it showed 50%, and in China, it was 1 out of 3. So we know a lot of people have got this virus without knowing they've got it. So they're just going to infect each other. So a lockdown without testing is doomed to fail from the beginning. It's as simple as that.
Becca, let me just quickly come back to you before we go to our first or the only ad break that we're going to have in this conversation. There's, and I think Hugo is raising a very critical point here, which is a lot of the rhetoric around the need for a lockdown was premised on the idea that, look, you have mostly poor South Africans who don't have access to great healthcare, who if they became sick would overwhelm the public health system. And it seems as though the data is not supporting this right now. And also worse yet, we're not really, there doesn't seem to be a concerted effort to gather the data. So in other words, if that was the issue, I would have expected a public health approach where there's literally mass testing in mostly your poorer township type areas, but we're not really seeing this, are we? So what are we basing, what do we think governments is basing a lot of the policy decisions on if we're not seeing the data?
So they because they needed to justify it to us with data from the very beginning, I agree with you. But starting this week, they've released some of their assumptions before the lockdown, which led to the lockdown. And if you see, according to them, they their own models overestimated the number of cases we would have by at this point. And so if your models overestimated the extent of the problem, why continue with the lockdown? So this is what I don't understand. So if because like we already knew the lockdown or not, some people were going to get sick. And so if the model is overestimating the extent of this problem, then you straight into the arena of harming the economy because you have a model that's actually overestimating the extent. Then you're taking radical decisions that harm the economy. And so because the health department or rather Professor Karim admitted this, I think this is enough reason to end the lockdown itself. And so because if the basis for their decision in the first place, they now admit was wrong, then I don't see any other logical conclusion.
I think you and millions of other South Africans at this point, guys, we're close to our first ad break, but before we go to break, there's two questions I want to leave you with and we'll take them up at the, after the break. Chaps, on the issue of freedoms, what does a free society look like in responding to something like COVID? Let's have that conversation. And number two, some of the violence that we've seen meted out to citizens, I think let's have that conversation in particular as it relates to how it's affected poor individuals. After the break, we'll continue our conversation with Mpiaki Kamini from the Free Market Foundation and Mr. Hugo Kruger, researcher and analyst.
You are listening to the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Guys, welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. In the last sort of 10, I might give it a few more minutes, but we'll see how that works. I sort of left two questions to my guests, which I really want us to grapple with. But before we go to the first question, really, I posed, which is how a free society should have responded to something like COVID, let me begin where I think we should begin in terms of how we've seen current, again, particularly the South African government respond to this, you know, the sort of the securocrat approach to this lockdown, excuse me, and pandemic. Mpiaki, I'm going to come to you on this one. We've been waxing lyrical, sharing videos, sharing images of what is just maybe a sheer unprofessional conduct by the security forces who've been deployed to enforce this lockdown. And it seems to mostly affect the poorer segments of our society, people who maybe can't, for example, self-isolate because of the socioeconomic status or rather environment that they live in. Talk to me about the psyche of this. Firstly, number one, what have we seen happen on the streets and the psyche that this might even create?
So we have seen people being beaten on the streets for going to the shops, for drinking beer on the side of the streets. We have seen people being killed. We have seen police breaking into people's homes and assaulting those people. I think I've seen at least two families. The entire family was beaten by soldiers or the police, and they just came into the house and started beating people. And so all of these violations, obviously, the latest death was this past weekend in Alexandria. All of these things have happened under our watch. And the psyche of it, of course, it's going to, I think it's going to, I don't know, I can't predict how exactly it's going to express itself, but the trauma of it is equivalent to what communities suffered under apartheid. And so we don't know how this will express itself. I don't know. It's certain to have a political impact, I think. But we just don't know what kind of impact.
My concerns in particular, I mean, we've seen, for example, mostly in the Western Cape, is that the frustration of the one-size-fits-all approach is beginning to be expressed by those who just, realistically for them, it's impractical. It has mostly been poorer township residents who have taken to the streets. I mean, in Mitchell's Plain, there was actual protest. But people said, this is untenable. I mean, we've got to be able to make some form of living during this period. And I don't think the politicians are awake to this. Hugo, let me quickly come to you. What have you seen in maybe those parts of the world, you know, in Europe? Have there been protests? I know in America, in Michigan, some guys took to the streets and said, no, let's open the economy up. This lockdown is absolutely untenable.
The US protesting. I mean, in Germany, they had it's only the Germans that can protest like that. So in France, there hasn't been protests, but we've also seen police brutality this time. We've also seen the police meeting immigrants, just doing what they've been doing in South Africa. Fortunately, in France, the difference is they haven't called in the army. And this is the biggest critique I've got against the South African army. An army is not a policeman, a soldier is not a policeman. They've got a soldier trained to kill. It's very obvious. And if you're going to use him for policing, you know, he's not trained to control crowds. And I'm worried when the first protest breaks out and they start throwing rocks at the army. That's where you can see fireworks go on.
Well, I mean, we've really had some protests, and again, they've been quite peaceful relative to what you can see, but that's not to say that, you know, with the lockdown having been extended, that you might not see, you know, more people becoming incredibly restless and saying, no, you know, this is untenable, this is a bad situation, and we're going to express this in an angry way. Guys, unfortunately, I'm so squeezed for time. We have 5 minutes or so just to really to answer that last question, because I think it's super important for those of us who, you know, talk a lot about freedom and liberty and these sort of values. Well, then let's perhaps answer the question for someone who's asking, okay, guys, I know you're libertarians and classical liberals, but how would you have dealt with something like a COVID-19 or any other pandemic, really, in this free society that we talk a lot about? Hugo, I'm going to begin with you. How does the classical liberal view addressing something like this in a free society?
Look, I'm very pragmatic. I'm not okay for temporarily giving up, you know, some restrictions for long-term people, but they have to have a sunset clause onto them. The other thing is here, I've got a quote here from Albert Camus from La Peste, a book he wrote in the beginning of the last century, where he said the only way to fight the plague that lots back then is honesty. If you have a government which is honest to its people, you find that there's trust, and then you find that people will practice self-discipline, you know, to do it. So, and I take the definition of freedom from General Eisenhower, who said the best definition for freedom is the ability to practice self-discipline. And I think if you're honest with people, they will do so. So I'm not against some measures being taken, but they must be proportional, must be scientific. And at the moment, we're not seeing that.
No, I fully agree on that. In fact, we're having this debate with someone online, and I was basically saying to them, you know, it's just to maybe echo the quote, the essence of the quote you raised, is that self-isolation, asking people to put on masks, social distancing, these are all measures which you could reasonably expect people, responsible people, to undertake without having to lock them down. But maybe I'm wrong. BIK, am I wrong? What would you have suggested?
So
yeah.
I don't know about time, but like I sort of conceived the question in a broader sense because I think it's all about, like, you know, you said a free society, so that's a very broad term that includes like how you treat people in terms of regulations and things like that in the economy. Property rights are respected, no commons where people can congregate and no one can really decide who should be in their space in public and so on. And so it will basically be a society where people are free to act. They have savings because their money is not debased. So they are free to act and react to crises like this in the most rational way that they feel is appropriate. And if someone acts irresponsibly, then they risk no more than themselves and anyone else who was foolish enough to associate with them.
No, guys, I as I just said, I am squeezed for time, but maybe just one more question. I've got 2 minutes, but one more very quick question on this. Going forward, the lockdown's been extended, of course, in South Africa for two more weeks, essentially. Beck, I'm going to start with you very briefly. Your thoughts on this. Is it something that we need to be, start phasing out, you know, gradually, as some of the ministers are saying, we're going to gradually do this? Or do we really think, you know, it's time to just end the lockdown? What would you suggest?
We should phase it out gradually, but the process should be on autopilot. So the steps should be known in advance to phasing out the lockdown, and it should be at unpredictable times. It shouldn't be up to the minister to come up and tell us what is lifted now. It should just be a predictable schedule,
Hugo, last word is yours.
I think it's going to be extended much longer than that because, once again, South Africa reacted too quickly. Then look at the evidence. This virus seems to be temperature dependent. So we're going into winter now. I won't be surprised if we see an uptick of cases. I think it should be phased out temporarily, but I don't think that's going to happen politically.
Well, guys, thank you so much for this brief conversation. Again, my apologies for the sound quality to the listeners if it was bad. I know these are two gentlemen you want to hear from a lot more. Hopefully I'll get them on my podcast on the Big Daddy Liberty channel. I'll chat to them offline, and that'll be a clearer conversation and a much longer conversation as we look at these. Let me say a quick thank you to my guests once again. Guys, thank you so much for joining me, and much appreciated. Guys, I'm going to go to my last ad break, and when we come back, we're going to look at the news week ahead. You know, what should you be looking out for? I know COVID and this lockdown will still dominate the headlines, but what are some of the other issues you need to be looking at in the news cycle?
This is the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Guys, welcome back to the show. As you're in the last 5 minutes or so, there's really two issues I'll be watching as we go forward. Number one is the insistence by our politicians of really what I consider to be rather mean-spirited regulations around this, that aren't really supported by seemingly the data and the evidence. And I'm hoping maybe in my next show we can have someone from that side of the aisle who can come and maybe explain the rationale behind a lot of these. You know, for instance, why are we banning the purchase of what is essentially the consumption, or those who rather want to consume, that is, alcohol responsibly? Why are we banning cigarettes, for example? I don't, as Hugo mentioned even before the break, Hugo, the writer from France, you know, those things are not banned anywhere else in the world, and, you know, that have a lockdown, for example. So why actually are we banning those things? Are we doing it because there's some sort of evidence-driven, data-driven rationale for that, or is it rather mean-spirited in its nature? So I think these are some of the questions as people look at some of the regulations of this lockdown that they'll want to have answered. For example, why can't we have prepared food, for instance? I mean, you have a lot of pensioners who maybe don't have the ability to cook on a day-to-day basis for themselves and would buy maybe pre-cooked meals and freeze them and consume those during this period. I mean, I don't think we're thinking through all the scenarios in this lockdown. So that'll be the one element. And very quickly, the last one is the issue of, you know, what then? What happens once the lockdown ends? You know, are we able to, you know, this lockdown cannot replace the need for a comprehensive quality healthcare system that addresses these issues and more. So are we going to have that conversation too? is the South African healthcare system even get up to deal with our everyday needs, regardless of a pandemic? So we're going to be having that conversation. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Remember, you can find me online on all your social media platforms. Just search Big Daddy Liberty on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and Twitter, of course, or The Big Daddy Liberty Show. Send me a message. What do you think about the show? What do you think about my guests? And also, you can catch my podcast. I'm going to record this podcast again with these two gentlemen in maybe a more clearer format and a bit longer, so we can have you can hear, rather, the conversation around our freedom. I'll catch you guys next week on the Big Daddy Liberty Show.